morning. And welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Mike Grell, and I am this morning's representative from the board. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. Please read the announcements listed in your order of service. Be sure to take the order of service home with you for further reference. In addition, we have several other announcements. We're going to start out. Terry Fritz is going to make an announcement for us.
Good morning. I'm Terry Fritz, and I'm one of many on the stewardship team this year. Next Sunday is our official stewardship kickoff. We can be more. While the theme is We Can Be More, we recognize that we are so much already. There is much to celebrate here at LCUUC, with each of us contributing our energy, our talent, our support, friendship, love, time, and resources. There is ever-increasing activity and momentum. In fact, it seems like our round wooden church is seldom empty, always abuzz with some activity. During stewardship, we want to celebrate what we are, but continue our journey together to becoming more. This year, we have taken a slightly different approach to stewardship and pledging. First, our board members were asked to pledge, and currently our committee chairs are in the process of submitting their pledges. After next week, everyone in the congregation will become involved. So, as I've said, our board members have pledged, and indeed, they have shown that they embrace their commitment to LCUUC with a sense of generosity and abundance. Have you heard the good news? Our board members have increased their pledges by 25% over last year. Each giving above the sustainer level on the giving guide chart. While not all of us are going to be able to embark on this journey at the same pace, we know that once a higher percentage of us are giving at or above the sustainer level, we will indeed reach our goal of full-time ministry. To begin this year's journey, our generous board recognizes that we need more than money to sustain us. So next week, they are going to butter us up by adorning their favorite aprons and serving us a pancake breakfast at 9 o'clock before service. After the service, we're going to begin the tile making, the mosaic that we started last year for the chalice, and it'll be to light the flame. Together, we can be more. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry. This Sunday's designated monthly collection is going to Southeastern Wisconsin Common Ground. Common Ground is a broad-based community organizing group dedicated to addressing critical social issues in our area. Since its inception, Common Ground has been successful in campaigning for the City of Milwaukee to increase youth jobs in Earn and Learn Summer Jobs program from 1,300 to 3,000, in saving Transformation City Church from eviction, in reopening negotiations for construction of Habitat housing in Ozaukee, in working with a bus company to add a new route to get clients to the food pantry of Waukesha. In negotiating with the largest bank owners of foreclosed properties to invest $32.8 million in a revitalization effort in Sherman Park, Milwaukee. This group also continues to work on healthcare, education, and religious freedom. Please donate generously to these worthy efforts that transform despair to hope and justice in our communities. Okay. Al's got an announcement now.
Morning. Clarification, our members aren't bored. One of the things that we're striving to do, thank you very little, is to grow our membership. And membership committee this year put some effort into changing that path to membership, and part of that is for those that are interested to take part in a orientation class. So you will see these little green dudes around. The date of the next orientation is April 22nd. So I encourage those visitors and those of you that know visitors to talk to pretty much anyone in the church about orientation and to consider joining that. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Al. I invite you to greet those sitting around you. If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitors table in the foyer. There's a variety of information available on that table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to anything that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church or if you've been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member. I'd be happy to talk with you about that as well. If you are visiting us with children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the story for all ages, at which time they will go to their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the door to my right and across the entryway if there's need for child care during the service. Classes will end at 11:15 a.m., at which time you can pick up your child from their classes. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, we would be pleased if you would introduce them. If any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, this would be a good time to do so. We would enjoy getting to know you. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner is a good place to gather for further discussion of the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode. In our series of testimonials, we have another one today from Michelle Hoyt.
Good morning. I don't usually like to speak in front of groups like this. If I have to be up here, I would much rather be singing. But I agreed to do this today because LCUUC has been such a good thing in my life. And when I really sat down to think about what LCUUC means to me and what it has meant to me through all the years, I was actually really touched by all the memories that kind of flooded my mind. I've been a member for about 8 years. And I joined back during the time when we met on Sunday nights at the Wales Presbyterian Church. I remember shopping for a UU church back when we first moved to Waukesha County. I went to services at Maguanico, Brookfield, Milwaukee, and LCUUC. And although some of those churches had some features that really appealed to me, and although LCUUC had some features that really didn't appeal to me, like the Sunday night services and not having their own building, there was just something about LCUUC and its people that told me this was right where I belonged. And I have never regretted my decision since to be a member. So what has LCUUC meant to me through the years more specifically? The first thing that stood out to me from the very first moment I came to that first service was, of course, the beautiful music and the hymns. I think that very first day they sang Spirit of Life, and that has always been something very special to me ever since that first day. I love the diverse, meaningful readings that they have at the back of the hymnals. Growing up, I wasn't exposed to other religions besides my one little church that I went to, so I did not know about all the diverse ways of thinking about religion out there. So that was it always has been very meaningful to me, all the readings that we do. And of course, I love being involved in the choir whenever my schedule allows me to, and the different committees I've participated in through the years. I've met such great people through all of those involvements. I have been so inspired by the religious ed opportunities for the children of this church, and finally now my kids are getting old enough that they're starting to benefit from it too, but also even some of the different book clubs or other opportunities that they have offered for the adults. I have really appreciated that, even though I haven't always been able to participate. Now that they've started up the Parent Covenant group again, I'm really enjoying that, and not just with the Parent Covenant group, but just in general, I love seeing all the UU families and how they interact with each other. It has been, you have all been such good role models for me in that regard, and I have learned what kind of a family I want to help raise from watching all of you, and even more people who are no longer here. And that includes, I actually include a bonus as meeting all the wonderful babysitters that I've met through church. And no, really, it actually means something to me that you guys have raised your kids so well that I want to trust your kids to help take care of my kids. That really does mean something special to me. And then just in general, I feel like the people who come to this church are so honest and so hardworking. You're so intelligent. And you're so genuine. I love the things that you say during joys and concerns. And I don't even know a lot of the new people because I have had, poor attendance myself raising my young family. And we've grown so big since I first joined 8 years ago. But I look up to so many people that I don't even know. But I see what you say in your emails and I see the work that you're doing. And I appreciate all of it. So thank you, everybody, and this is what LCUUC means to me, and this is why I always find a way to support LCUUC financially, and in the future when my home life settles down and my kids are big enough to take care of themselves, I hope to give a lot back for the future families that join. So thank you.
I hope you find this morning's service stimulating. Our speaker today is the Reverend Elizabeth Marsh. She is a Unitarian Universalist minister living in Madison. She has consulted with the lay ministry program of First Unitarian Society and worked in collaboration with Reverend Lori Lobin and other area clergy to provide their wedding officiants services to couples. Elizabeth and her partner, Marsha, are members of the James Reeb UU congregation in Madison. Thank you.
prelude that's called On the Seashore by Felix Mendelssohn. It's funny because I didn't really think about that when I was planning what I would say for the chalice lighting. I thought today is such a wonderful day that in honor of the seventh Unitarian principle, you know, the one that says that we affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are part, I thought I'd take you all outside fishing. So I brought my pole. Did anybody else bring theirs? I guess you guys are a little unprepared. But there's another catch to this. I apologize for that. We're going to have to do it here, in the sanctuary, right now, during the time when we light the chalice. And then I thought, you know, sad as this is, I don't really like fishing that much. I'm more a person who likes the idea of fishing. And I like, even more than that, the idea of fishing with all of you while we're inside would be really cool. And so I found this poem by Billy Collins that I thought would capture that idea. It's called Fishing on the Susquehanna in July. I have never been fishing on the Susquehanna, or any river for that matter, to be perfectly honest. Not in July or any month have I had the pleasure, if it is a pleasure, of fishing on the Susquehanna. I am more likely to be found in a quiet room like this one, a painting of a woman on the wall, a bowl of tangerines on the table, trying to manufacture the sensation of fishing on the Susquehanna. There is little doubt that others have been fishing on the Susquehanna, rowing upstream in a wooden boat, sliding the oars under the water, then raising them to drip in the light. But the nearest I have ever come to fishing on the Susquehanna was one afternoon in a museum in Philadelphia, when I balanced a little egg of time in front of a painting in which that river curled around a bend under a blue, cloud-ruffled sky, dense trees along the banks, and a fellow with a red bandana sitting in a small, green, flat-bottomed boat holding the thin whip of a pole. That is something I am unlikely ever to do, I remember saying to myself and to the person next to me. Then I blinked and moved on to other American scenes of haystacks, water whitening over rocks, even one of a brown hare who seemed so wired with alertness, I imagined him springing right out of the frame. So perhaps some of you have a bumper sticker on your car that says, I'd rather be fishing or sailing or hiking, or I'd rather be at an art museum or reading. But today, as beautiful as it is, each of us chose to take this little egg of time and spend it here. So I'm going to light this chalice today as our campfire, our little bit of the outdoors here inside, which we are gathered around to listen to the world that each of us brings to this place. You all to rise and join in the singing of hymn 38, Morning Has Broken.
Thank you. there are any children who would like to join us down front for the story for all ages, come on down. Right, does that work? Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay. This is my first time with one of these, so thank you for your forgiveness. So, this is a story called Frederick, and this is a story that my grandma had in her house. This book actually used to belong to my uncle. So this is a story that I used to know from a long time ago. Have any of you heard of this story before, Frederick? You know it? Cool. Yeah, I like it a lot. So Frederick is a little mouse, a little tiny mouse, and you can see he has this little flower and his eyes are kind of droopy, dreamy. That's an indication of Frederick. So all along the meadow where the cows grazed and the horses ran, there was an old stone wall. And in that wall, not far from the barn and the granary, a chatty family of field mice had made their home. There they all are. And they're chatty, so they like to talk a lot while they're doing their work. But the farmers had moved away, and the barn was abandoned, and the granary stood empty. And since the winter was not far off, the little mice began to gather corn and nuts and straw. They all worked day and night, all of them except Frederick. There he is. He's kind of dozing in the corner. Frederick, why don't you work? They asked. I do work, said Frederick. I gather sun rays for the cold, dark winter days. There he is again. And when they saw Frederick sitting there staring at the meadow, they said, and now, Frederick? I gather colors, said Frederick, for winter is gray. And once Frederick seemed half asleep. Are you dreaming, Frederick? They asked reproachfully. But Frederick said, oh no, I am gathering words. For the winter days are long and many, and we'll run out of things to say. Oh, here comes winter. The winter days came, and when the first snow fell, the five little field mice took to their hideout in the stones. In the beginning, there was lots to eat, and the mice told stories of foolish foxes and silly cats. They were a happy family. There they all are, chatting, eating. But little by little, they had nibbled up most of the nuts and berries, and straw was gone, and the corn was only a memory. It was cold in the wall, and no one felt like chatting. Then they remembered what Frederick had said about sun rays and colors and words. What about your supplies, Frederick? They asked. There he is. Ooh, he sparked up. Close your eyes, said Frederick as he climbed on a big stone. Now I send you the rays of the sun. Do you feel how their golden glow? And as Frederick spoke of the sun, the four little mice began to feel warmer. Was it Frederick's voice? Was it magic? Ooh, look at that. How about the colors, Frederick? They asked anxiously. Close your eyes again, said Frederick. And when he told them of the blue periwinkles, the red poppies, and the yellow wheat, and the green leaves of the berry bush, they saw the colors as clearly as if they had been painted in their minds. And the words, Frederick? Frederick cleared his throat, waited a moment, and then, as if from a stage, he said, "Who scatters snowflakes? Who melts the ice? Who spoils the weather? Who makes it nice? Who grows the four-leafed clovers in June? Who dims the daylight? And who lights the moon? Four little field mice who live in the sky, four little field mice like you and I. One is the spring mouse who turns on the showers. Then comes the summer who paints in the flowers. The fall mouse is next with walnuts and wheat, and winter is last with little cold feet. Aren't we lucky these seasons are four? Think of a year with one less or one more." When Frederick had finished, all the little mice applauded. "But Frederick," they said, "you are a poet." Frederick blushed, took a bow, and said shyly, "I know it." So that's a little story of Frederick the Mouse. And all of us have all kinds of different work that we need to do in the world, and it's all very important. So I hope that you have a good time in your class today. Is there someone who's the lantern keeper, the lantern taker today? Someone want to do it? Okay, have a good time in your class.
Now is the time in our service when we can all share our joys or concerns with the congregation. If you choose to share, please raise your hand. An usher will bring you a microphone. Please briefly tell us your name and the joy or concern you wish to share. And I will light a candle to represent that joy or concern. In this sharing, may our sorrows be lightened and our joys multiplied. I will light our memorial candle to acknowledge the many conflicts in the world. May a peaceful resolution be found.
My name is Lois Farrell, and I'm a guest today. Yesterday, I signed up, put my deposit down for a trip to Cuba, and I'm going to study Cuban music. It's a joy.
Candle of joy, Paul. Next Saturday, we have an open house for the houses that I've been working on for the past 9 months for Habitat for Humanity, and some of the members of our church have also worked on. So we're happy for the two families and their 10 children that will be living there.
I'm Joanne, and a candle of concern for our friend Tracy Langan, who many of you know. Her son died 2 months ago, and she and her other son, Derek, just continue to struggle so much.
A candle of joy. My name is Helen. I've had a daughter who went through the RE program, and she's about to be 21 next month, April 2nd. But it's a concern also, because with that number 21 comes great responsibility, and I could use some energy sent my way for that. Thank you.
I'm Barbara, And I have both a candle, first of joy, for the bluebird that tried to fly into my windows yesterday, into my house, and for the blue heron I saw today. And my candle of concern is that everybody pray that the weather stays nice so it doesn't all of a sudden become extremely cold and hurt these animals.
I'm Terry, and my third grandchild was born last night, boy. Only John, my husband's going to Colorado to see him before me.
And I will light one final candle for the joys and concerns we hold in our hearts.
I offer the words of Unitarian Universalist minister Rebecca Parker to help us hold a space of reflection. In the midst of a world marked by tragedy and beauty, there must be those who bear witness against unnecessary destruction and who, with faith, stand and lead in freedom with grace and power. There must be those who speak honestly and do not avoid seeing what must be seen of sorrow and outrage, or tenderness and wonder. There must be those whose grief troubles the water, while their voices sing and speak refreshed words. There must be those whose exuberance rises with lovely energy that articulates Earth's joys. There must be those who are restless for respectful and loving companionship among human beings, whose presence invites people to be themselves without fear. There must be those who gather with the congregation of remembrance and compassion, draw water from old wells, and walk the simple path of love for neighbor. And there must be communities of people who seek to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with their God, who call on the strength of soul force to heal, transform, and bless life. There must be religious witness. And I invite us to share in a moment of silence to hold all of this joy and the sorrows together. Now I invite you to stay seated and join in singing hymn number in the teal hymnal, 1012, When I Am Frightened, number 1012.
Thank you.
This reading is from the book The Breakfast of Champions by Kurt Vonnegut. Kilgore Trout went to the men's room of the New York City movie house. There was a message written in pencil on the tiles by the roller tile. This was the message: "What is the purpose of life?" Trout plundered his pockets for a pen or pencil. He had an answer to the question, but he had nothing to write with, not even a burnt match. So he left the question unanswered. But here is what he would have written if he had found anything to write with. What is the purpose of life? To be the eyes and ears and conscience of the creator of the universe, you fool. Now is the time for our offertory. This Sunday, our designated collection is for Common Ground, so loose cash will go to Common Ground. Or you can make out on your checks how you'd like to split any money that you're giving for the church and for Common Ground. We come to this place because we love what exists here. The church is a living entity, and like all living things, it must have nurture and sustenance. Its breath and its heartbeat, its life itself, can only be derived from its living components, us. The offering will now be received.
Good morning, everyone. It is a real pleasure to be here with you, in particular this morning. Like it was said in the introduction, I am good friends with Lori Lobbin, who I believe was a member of this congregation. Is that right? Yeah, she and I were at about the same place in seminary. So when we were in seminary together, we would kind of confer and talk about our experiences, and it was really neat to get to know her. So, and she'd always talked about this congregation with so much joy, so it's neat to be here today. So I want to start with an image. In December 1968, the crew of the Apollo 8 spacecraft, they returned from their journey around the moon and to the moon, with the first images of our planet from outer space. One photo, which came to be called Earthrise, immediately changed the way that we perceive our place in the universe. And maybe you've seen this photo, maybe you can imagine it. In the photo, we see the tiny blue and white marble of Earth. It's half shaded, like a half moon. It's small against this gigantic black sky. It's blue and white. It looks like a marble just hanging there in the sky against the bigger horizon of the rocky and gray moon. And now this photo is exactly the opposite from all the countless photos we've seen of sunrise over the Pacific Ocean or moonrise over the Rocky Mountains. But it's exactly the opposite of all that. It's the sun or the moon as the horizon and the Earth rising above it. When this photo from the Apollo 8 moon mission was published, humans had our first moon-centric view of our home planet. Earth appeared small, distant, and most strikingly, it appeared very vulnerable and almost alone in the universe. Our perspective of our home planet was forever changed. This photo has been called the most influential environmental photograph ever taken. The American astronomer and writer Carl Sagan wrote, "Look at that dot. That's here. That's home. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you have ever heard of, every human being who ever was, on that dot." This new perspective of Earth, seen isolated in the vast vacuum of the universe, surely was influential to the nascent environmental movement of that time. Wisconsin's own Senator Gaylord Nelson was calling for a nationwide environmental teach-in day, which was modeled after the Vietnam War teach-ins of the same time period. This first environmental teach-in took place on April 22, 1970. It involved 20 million people across the country and quickly spread across the globe. It was known, of course, as Earth Day, and we still celebrate Earth Day today. Not today, but this year. Many of you may remember that Earth Day. Raise your hand if you remember the first one. I don't, but many of you do. So what gratitude we all have for the founders of that Earth Day, so that people my age, people our children's age, all of us could know what a world we have and what a world we need to have. My family, my brothers and sisters and I grew up with Earth Day activities in our elementary school classrooms, with our municipalities supplying recycling bins right alongside the trash bins. That is nearly a direct connection from Earth Day. And environmental awareness has become an important part of the religious expression of many Unitarian Universalists in the denomination and of many congregations. Unitarian Universalists often recognize Earth Day in April in our church services, and many congregations, including this one, are participating in the Green Sanctuary program, where we learn and teach ourselves about how to make our congregations, our buildings, and our processes, our activities, more earth-friendly. This effort helps to educate ourselves, and it's an important way that we live out our seventh principle, which I think it's right there on the wall, is that right? That's neat, it's right over there. So Unitarian Universalists often make the connection between environmental concerns and religious values. Together in our religious communities, we continue searching for ways, more ways, new ways to respond to environmental crises, environmental needs that will transform ourselves and will transform our world. And we experience a devastated planet not just with our eyes and our minds, but in our hearts. We need religious community to help us respond with our minds and our hearts to the plight and the wonders of the environmental movement. We long to make a difference, yet how do we often we feel confused and overwhelmed by what to do? So much feels out of our hands because, well, it is out of our hands. at least if we imagine ourselves solving climate change right now in a year. That's nearly impossible. But that urgent task is sure, if we think about that urgent task in such a short period of time, that is such an easy way to get stuck in despair. Another way to approach the environmental tasks, the environmental justice that we strive to take part in, is to think smaller, to allow ourselves to be affected more intimately by our world. Our way to respond to our world can be through the practice of religious witness. In our meditation, Rebecca Parker wrote of the need for religious witness, to speak honestly and not avoid seeing what must be seen of sorrow and outrage, or of tenderness and joy. This is what the environmental movement has been all along, a way to witness to both the tragedy and the beauty that is possible. And in the reading, Kurt Vonnegut wrote that the purpose of life is to be the eyes and ears and conscience of the Creator of the universe. Who knew that Reverend Parker and Kurt Vonnegut could have such a similar conversation about the need for religious witness? And you may also have heard of the story The Lorax, now a major motion picture. It's the beloved book by Dr. Seuss. Has anyone seen the movie yet? Anyone? Chris has, yeah. It came out just a few weeks ago. The story describes an idyllic setting and how one man affected it by cutting down all the trees, clear-cutting, essentially. The main storyteller of this book is called the Onceler, and he comes upon a great grove of these colorful, silky-topped trees, hillsides of gallivanting animals, and ponds full of smiling, humming fish. What a beautiful setting he's made. The Onceler discovers that the silky tops of the truffula trees can be knitted into things that everyone wants, and at a great financial profit, too. So the Onceler, he cuts down his first truffula tree, and out of the trunk pops the Lorax. He's a shortish and oldish and mossy sort of man who speaks with a voice that is sharpish and bossy. "Mister," exclaims the little man, "I am the Lorax, and I speak for the trees. I speak for the trees, for the trees have no tongue." The book goes on to describe the Lorax's insistence that the Onceler stop cutting down all of the truffula trees, but, of course, to no avail. Soon all the truffula trees are gone, and the Onceler realizes too late that his greed has destroyed a beautiful place. The whole story is a moving tribute to the inherent preciousness of our land, of our landscape. And out of the whole book, however, I'm even getting shivers now thinking about it, what the Lorax first says to the Onceler moves me the most. "I am the Lorax," he says. "I speak for the trees have no tongue. They cannot speak for themselves in a way that you, Mr. Onceler, will understand." What a tender gesture to defend beings that cannot speak for themselves. The Lorax is bearing witness to the greedy Onceler on behalf of those voiceless trees. The Lorax is saying, "I see what you are doing, sir. Your actions will not go unnoticed because I am here to notice them." And that is the essence of religious witness. To use the power that we have to speak on behalf of those who have no voices or whose voices are ignored because we can't quite understand them. To be a translator, to be a presence on the side of the powerless or the power little. I don't like to think that the trees have no power. I think we just can't understand them. Speaking to that language of power and saying, "Your actions will not go unnoticed because I am here, we are here to notice what you are doing." This is what people have done for decades when they link hands outside of nuclear power facilities. Or like some committed Quakers I know in California and Oregon, They stand in front of old-growth trees, linking arms, linking hands, to prevent the trees from being logged. Eventually, my Quaker friends get arrested for their actions, but they get the chance to speak with their presence. We see what you are doing, and you will not get away with it unnoticed, because we are noticing, and we will tell of what we see. So how do we know that our actions actually make a difference, that noticing makes a difference, and speaking does something? A few years ago, Unitarian Universalist minister Alan Taylor, he's a minister in Chicago, he preached a sermon about his intention to witness against torture with hundreds of others at Fort Benning, Georgia. Some of you may have heard of the School of the Americas. It has a new, much a different name. It doesn't sound as awful, but it's essentially the same thing. The School of the Americas is a combat training school for Latin American soldiers in Georgia. In a sermon just prior to visiting Fort Benning, Reverend Taylor reflected, "Do I think this witnessing will change the course of history?" Because he goes and he stands with other people, some people get arrested, to witness against this torture. "Do I think that my witness will change the course of history?" he asks. "No." "Do I think the United States government will take notice of me and a few hundred other people standing around there?" "Likely the U.S. government will not take notice." "Is this a vain action that will simply result in a loss of a bit of my time and money?" "Perhaps," he says. "And yet I feel compelled to do something with the hope that acting in solidarity with others will continue turning the tide against those who believe that torture is justified." Reverend Taylor asks questions that we all ask at one time or another. Is this recycling enough? Is green sanctuary enough? Is walking outside enough? Will my actions make a lasting difference? We want our efforts to matter on a larger scale. But to ask if my actions will change the course of history is slightly a trick question, because of course it will. Most likely not on a grand scale, but something will be different because we act. We never go anywhere without affecting our surroundings. And another question, or another set of questions to ask, is what difference will my action make to this piece of land, or to this building, to this congregation? What difference will it make for my children to see me speak up about this? Perhaps the most religious question to ask oneself, it gets right at the core, is the question, will this action change me into a more compassionate person? And maybe you've heard this final story. It's often passed around on email as an inspirational message. The story is based on the essay called The Star Thrower, which is written by one of my favorite writers, Lauren Isley. The story goes like this. One day, a man was walking alone on a beach. As he looked down the shore, he saw a human figure moving like a dancer. As he got closer, he saw that it was a young man, and the young man wasn't dancing, but instead he was reaching down in the sand, picking something up, and very gently throwing it back in the ocean. As he got closer, the first man called out, "Good morning! What are you doing?" The young man paused, looked up, and replied, "I'm throwing starfish into the ocean." The first man said, "I guess I should have asked, why are you throwing starfish into the ocean?" "Well, the sun is up and the tide is going out, and if I don't throw them in, they'll die, for the whole beach was covered with starfish." "But young man, don't you realize that there are miles and miles of beach and starfish all along it? You can't possibly make a difference." The young man listened politely. Then he bent down, picked up another starfish, and threw it into the sea, past the breaking waves. He said, "It made a difference for that one." To bring our awareness to the individual spruce or the stand of oaks along our regular walking route, to think of each individual starfish, that it makes a difference to that one, or it makes a difference to that eastern bluebird in our at our window, or the giant swallowtail butterflies in our garden, to remember our kinship with our particular earth dwellers helps give our efforts tangible purpose. When we create a relationship with the plants and animals who share our earth home, who share our neighborhoods and our towns with us, when we create that relationship, we resist that sense of despair that can come when we imagine the whole scale, the global scale of things. So even though it might feel corny, do get to know the birds and the squirrels in your yard. Say hello to the trees on your walk this afternoon. We are called to be the eyes and ears and conscience of the Creator of the universe. Who will speak for the trees? I hope we all will, if only because we love them too fiercely to let them go unnoticed. And so I have next a little activity for us. I know it's a little unusual to do an activity after a sermon, and the time is almost getting late, but I have a creation of an earth altar. And so I'm going to put this thing back on. And hope it stays over my ear. Oh, great, thank you. So I have with me, brought with me from Madison, some items here. Some pine cones, some thistles, some stones, a seashell for a lucky person. And we are going to create together an earth altar. You've heard of altars before. Actually, this table here used to be an altar for the church that was here. And altars are a way in many religious traditions to honor that which is important to us. Loved ones present, loved ones gone. This will be a practice for us today to honor the earth and our experiences with the earth. So before we do this, I'll explain how it's going to happen. I'll explain first, actually. So I'll put these baskets here. This table will be bare, and I will invite everyone to come forward and take an item that seems to have some meaning to you. And we'll place it all together, and we will together create a way to honor our kinship and our relationship with our home planet. And so as we prepare for this action today, I ask you to think for a moment of a time or a place where you felt especially connected to the earth. Whether it was this morning, whether it was sometime in your childhood, think on a time when you felt especially connected to the earth. A time that meant so much to you that you kind of felt that you were a part of everything. We each have those moments when we notice that we are a part of everything. We are so large, and yet we are so small at the same time. Staring at the night sky, seeing Jupiter and Venus together this month, being out on a hike together. I invite you to think of that, and as the music starts to play, I invite you to come forward, choose an item, and then place it together on this table. And we will together create a way, a religious tradition that goes back thousands of years for many religious traditions. We'll create an earth altar together. Thank you. We have each brought symbols of meaning to this table, this common table. And each of us brings our own meaning to these items, and yet we have created it together to create something as one community. After the service, I invite you to come forward and look at it and kind of see what everyone created together. But we are reminded of how much we depend on the earth and how much together we can do and make a difference. We are reminded that the earth cannot heal without our help. May our memories and our hopes be held by this altar as we continue our service together in honor of the earth. Blessed be. I invite you to stand as you are willing and able and join in our closing hymn, number 121, We'll Build a Land. And we'll just sing verses 1 and 4. Verses 1 and 4. As we go from this place to our lives on the highways and byways of life, may we remember this moment and carry it with us throughout the day. May we carry the light of this chalice through us, through the week, until we return together again. Blessed be, and amen.